You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Okay, now, Donald, our special guest. This man
special.
Is special, Bruce, he's special, he's gorgeous, he's, no, delicious. So this man here I've known for not, I wasn't a contemporary of his when he played for Geelong, but I've been a contemporary of his on the television for decades, and he is probably about as polarised for me as you can get. I'm probably the most unpopular person that was on the footy show, and this man was probably the most popular. And I wouldn't know of anyone in Australia that thinks he's not a great man. I like him. He's a large man.
Why do you like him?
Because, I'll tell you, because he is genuine. He doesn't try too hard to be something he's not. He laughs at himself, doesn't take himself too seriously. And I call him jovially, I call him fat.
Well, because, he is fat.
But when you are fat, you don't like to be nominated as being fat. But he laughs at himself because he's not that fat, but he's a bit bigger than
well,
when he...
Well, he's okay. Huge.
He's a bit big. He's okay. Huge. He's a bit bigger than
Get
when
Get on
he,
with it.
He's a bit bigger than when he played football, and he hangs his hat on, and he needs to have a hat because he's as bald as a badger. But he hangs his hat on the fact that when Geelong were 5 points down against Footscray in a qualifying final, I think in 1994, he kicked the ball. We think it was 50 metres, but he says it was 90, and he won the game by a point and catapulted the Cats That's into it. The next.
So he hangs his hat on that.
Well,
he's got far more.
His name is Bouncing.
Bouncing.
Bouncing, because he's like a big ball. Bouncing
Buffoon, Billy.
Righto.
Shut up, Donald.
That's
his name is Bouncing Bill Brownless. And welcome.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Doug. And that
Doug,
might
no,
be.
No. That's my son's name.
No, you're Don.
And you're confusing me with Doug Wade.
Doug Wade.
It's going to be a battle of the giants, this. Have a listen to these intellectuals go head to head. This will be fantastic. I might just sit back and listen to you numbskulls slug it out between you.
Thanks, Sam, for the intro. Very nice of you. Good to be here with you, Foss, and good to see you. I haven't seen you for a while.
No, because I'm now marginalised. I'm not on any form of media, and you've taken over. Well, so we'll just jump right in. You've taken over being the... great draw card on the Sunday footy show,
really.
As opposed to the footy show, which has been cancelled and had a brief run last year, I think, or was that 2 years ago when they changed the whole dynamic? Yep. Anyhow, and you've moved from that onto the Sunday footy show, and it's very popular, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's funny, the broadcasters, the Channel 7, haven't got a Sunday footy show, which is strange.
Extraordinary, isn't it?
It is, and we've always wondered that, haven't we, Sam? When we were working for Nine, that Channel 7 didn't have a... didn't have a footy show, but Sunday's going well. It's going okay. Tony Jones, old chompers, he's learnt to take the piss out of himself, which I think
he has
people,
finally.
Yeah, finally.
He took himself very seriously for a long, long time.
He's a newsreader, Don, and they've got to be very straight and do nothing wrong. And
yeah,
not
but he could hand it out. He could hand it out, but is he now taking it?
Yeah, he is, and that's what people have fallen. I wouldn't say in love with him, but they like him, chompers. So he's going well, and Nath Brown's the same. Matty Lloyd's another one that's worked out that he can have a bit of fun and enjoy it and take.
So you've bought all these this part of their persona out, Billy, have you?
You know where it all comes from.
And, what?
It's this man here because we've all learned from him. Believe it or not, we've learned from Sam over the years, and Sam, and I do like Sam, I always have. But I remember before the footy shows, we'd say, righto, we might do this. We want to have a bit of fun here. We want to take the piss here. And Sam would say, all right, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? The actual team player, which I don't think he was when he played footy, but during the footy shows, he would say, what do you want me to do? How far do you want me to go? And that's where we've all learnt from, believe it or not.
I thought it'd be his
show. I knew there was a reason I asked him to come on.
I thought it'd be your show. I was going to ask about production meetings.
Yes.
And if you didn't get your way, how you'd spit the dummy and probably walk out.
That's absolutely incorrect.
Is that wrong, Billy?
We would have production meetings, and Sam would come because they had sushi. And there was one tray of sushi Well, and what do you Sam think would grab it off Joe, wouldn't you? Joe would bring it in and you'd take it.
I wouldn't grab Joe. I'd grab the sushi.
Yes, you did. And he
Joe's
would,
a girl.
He would sit there. And you have you seen him eat? How much he puts in his mouth?
At one time. At one time. And he can conduct a conversation with a mouthful of sushi.
Yeah, so he'd have six
So what are we going to have? What are we going to have for lunch today? Oh, we'll go to the Japanese.
Yeah, that's right.
Jeez.
He loves it. So, mate, and the production meetings were good. And what Sam, he would always... come from another way, which is always good. You've got to have someone in the, you know, in the meetings that come from a different background or see things differently, and he used to do that, and he would argue the case. Most of the times it was going down the wrong track and it'd get knocked on the head a bit, and we'd work it all out in the end.
That's right. We just do it off the top of our head in the final analysis, Don. No matter how much planning you do, you cannot plan to do things off the top of your head. You cannot plan to be casual. You've got to be casual in the first place.
Yeah. Now, Billy, why did you, when you came in here, a T-shirt, why did you swap your T-shirt for a long-sleeve crew neck jumper for this interview?
Well, I just thought I'd put on something black. If you carry black. A bit of weight, it's good to put on some...
And do you think people will be it, looking at you, do
is
you?
Is it on camera?
Yes, we are on camera.
We're not on camera, Rob. No.
Well, take your top off. And just sit there. Exactly. Sit there. Sit there bare gutted. Give us a look at your ample
frame.
Well,
mate, no, this is a bit there, and I'm hairy too, and geez. I'm hairy. But that's what ISO does. And
ISO.
ISO.
Isolation, Don.
Yeah.
Don's grappling with the English language since we've started this, so we had a very, very tricky word earlier about innovative. Innovative. And Don had a lot of trouble trying to pronounce it.
Give
it again. Go on, have a crack at it, Don.
Innovative. Don, get it right.
Thanks, Billy. Now, listen, Billy.
Yes.
I drive to Queensland once a year with the horses on board. If I leave early enough, I can make lunch
at
Jerilderie.
Good
now,
boy.
Billy, I walk into a cafe there on the left-hand side, the a bakery.
Bakery.
There are four portraits on the wall.
Yes.
Can you tell me the significance of the four portraits? There's one of Charles Kingsford Smith.
Is there?
Oh. Jeez, Billy. The next one.
Yeah,
the next
one
is
sure
Sir John Monash.
Sir John Monash lived in Jerilderie.
Was when he born was, there or
nah,
just lived?
Wasn't born there, but lived in Jerilderie when he was a young fella.
Do you think Charles Kingsford Smith might have landed his plane or done something?
Why would he be on the wall?
Well, just shut up, please.
Yeah, I'll look that one up.
There was...
Ned Kelly. Ned Kelly robbed Jerilderie and wrote the Jerilderie letter, which you all know about. He locked two police in their cells and sat down and wrote the Jerilderie letter. And they believe that Sir John Monash and Ned Kelly bumped into each other at Jerilderie. And
oh, come on.
Yeah, that's what they believe.
Well, John Monash would have been a young lad if that's
He's a
case.
Very young lad, yeah.
Folklore, yeah. Donald.
My great-grandfather cut Ned Kelly's hair. Did you know that, Billy?
His beard or
really
his...
He didn't
no,
cut his head
hair.
Off.
He was a barber. He was a barber.
Where at?
Either Beechworth or Rutherglen.
Righto. And the next one is me.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's
hang on, Billy, you're jumping the gun. There is another photograph, or not portrait of, he looks like landed gentry. He's either English aristocracy or Australian landed gentry. I don't know who
Hastings.
He is. Is that his name?
He could have been the king, the next king. He at one stage was going to be king of England. And somehow ended up in Jewelry. Like, there's
what,
a great
so
story.
He's a land, he was a landowner in Jewelry.
He might have followed some skirt
and
out
then,
there.
And then there's
I think he did. There's a bit of a story behind it. But he was going to be
and
king
you're
of
the fourth face.
Yeah. So, well, I was born in Urana, which is a tiny little town just out of Jewelry there. Grew up in Jewelry. My parents had a newsagent in Jewelry. My old man fell off a horse.
I thought your father was a stockman.
He was a stockman, and he fell off a horse at Canago. No, not Canada. Oh, yeah. Pretty Pine. You know Pretty Pine, just out of Deniliquin? He was in a horse race, and he was a big, for a jockey, 6'3". And it's a sad story, Sam, so don't laugh. Because
no, I'm not laughing.
You know the old picnic races?
Yeah.
And there was about five in a race, and he was flying at the end, finished second, and a drunk walked out on the track and hit Dad's horse. Rolled on him. Dad died three or four times. Come back to life. Went.
Hang on, he died or died?
Brought him back. No, died. horse rolled on him, swallowed his false teeth molars. I actually remember seeing it. I was about 6 years old, and I remember Mum running out onto the track and things like that. So the poor, he was in a lot of trouble. One side was no good. You know, he was no good on one side. And that's, we went back to Drury to live because that's where Mum's parents were.
And Bill, I think your dear old dad passed not long ago, just probably on the almost the day you came back from the jungle from I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Mm. You arrived back and your poor old dad passed.
He did, yes.
Last year or this
no,
year?
No, this year. When this I year. Got out of the jungle about the 22nd or 3rd of January. And, of course, you got no phone, and it's a bit sad again. But
oh, of course it
is. I got all these messages, turn your phone on, there's a lot of messages. And then my daughter rang, and she said, I've got something to tell you. Your dad had passed away. And I hadn't seen him for a while. I knew he was a bit crook. He was in...
Still living up there?
No, he's in Mount Eliza by then. And
how old was he?
He was 82. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he was pretty crook. But it was just a big shock. I was over halfway around the world, hadn't spoken to him. I couldn't talk to him, obviously, and flew back home as soon as I could. But that was the 2 hours after I got out of the jungle. So that was
extraordinary. Now, we'll get on to the jungle just later.
Well, sure. Can I continue on with my trip?
Of course you can, Donald.
So
it's our show.
I have lunch at Jerildery, and I continue on up the road.
Yes.
And I get to a little town that's got it's not even a town. It's got an old football ground on the right-hand side, but just prior to coming that, I get to a railway line, and on the left there's a pub, and there might be one or two houses, and there's two silos by the rail siding. Mm. So I pull in over there, and B. Brownless has kicked the football over those silos. Now, I sat there, and I thought, shit, that's not a bad kick. Mm. How did you manage to get the ball over the top of those silos, and how far back were you when you actually let them get? And did you actually do it?
Yes.
And there is vision of it, isn't there?
There is. Remember,
so there you are.
It's at Marul.
Marul is the place. Sorry, Marul.
Yeah, Marul. So that was a true story. A mate was getting married in West Wyalong, a mate of mine.
Oh, yeah, I stay at West Wyalong.
Yeah, so West Wyalong down the road. Yeah. Wayne Flagg was his name, from Assumption, mate. So this is true. Three of us in the car drop into Drury. We pinch Mum's car. It had petrol. It was a bigger car, aircon, all that. We're having a few frothies on the way to the wedding, making good time. We went over that railway line.
Yep.
The car hit the bump and all that, spun out of control. Next minute, we're out the front of the pub. So we thought,
that's quarter of a mile down.
Well, Don, we said, we're here now. We may as well go and have a drink, my friend. So we walked in. Now, this is true. Where are we? Marul, population 28. And it's not much there.
There's nothing.
Nothing there. So there were some kids playing the pinball machines. We have a few beers. There's a footy behind the bar. And we said, mate, what's the story with this footy? He said, an Aboriginal boy passed through about 20 years ago and kicked that footy over the silos across the road. Everyone's tried since. No one can do it. So a few more beers.
Are you still playing football at this stage?
Yeah, it was pre-season. It was after the season, sorry. It was about December.
So you're fit.
I'm reasonably fit. He gets the footy. One of the kids was playing the pinball machines, had to run home, get a pump. It was flat. Pumped it up. We walk across this paddock and all I had on was...
No, it's just across the road, mate. Well, you were pissed.
No, it was a paddock.
Anyway, go on, you tell us the story.
So we're in shorts.
You were there, obviously, Don, were you?
Well, I've been there and I've looked at the pub and where it is in location.
Exactly. So anyway, shorts and singlet on and bare feet on, if you can have bare feet on. Yeah. So I'm going to have the first kick. And we're on the railway, so there's a railway line.
Yeah, that's right, that's on the other side.
Yeah, but I'm on this side, the pub side.
The pub side, on where the road.
There's a little
platform. Don't you bother about telling the story, Bill. Don's going to make sure that you get it.
I saw the platform. Keep going.
So we're on the platform, the pub side.
Yes.
So you had to kick a drop punt because you had to go straight up. You couldn't kick a torpedo.
What? Oh, okay.
Because you had to kick it straight over the top. There's a little pitch roof at the top.
I understand. I saw it all. Yeah. I've taken it all in.
Oh, absolutely. Of course you have.
Because I thought, could I do it?
Yeah.
Could you do
so, it? And I was reasonably fit and I'd had a few frothies, so I was loose. And I kicked a drop punt and honestly, it went straight over the top.
Bullshit.
True. This is...
That's vertically. That's straight. That's about 30 or 40 metres up, isn't it?
Bill, there is vision of it.
34 metres.
You can't say bullshit. It's immortalised on...
You've been there and had a look at this silo at Marul, have you? You've actually stood on...
It's 100 foot. What's that? 30.
Well, I stood on that 30 platform. Meters,
3 yeah, metres?
33 metres, yeah.
I stood on that platform and I thought, how the hell did you get that ball up over the top?
So it was like an under, up and under or whatever they kick in rugby. So straight over the top. This is true. Some kids had come to watch and they were around the back because I went around the back of solo, ran the footy around. My two mates stayed there for an hour trying to kick the footy over. I go back. I'm his best mate in the pub. And then we continued on. Luckily, we had an Uber driver to drive.
I was just going to say, Bill, so you stole your mother's car and you were drink driving and you thought you'll stop at this place and kick the ball over the silo.
And guess what? We went into West Wyalong, found the church. We put our suits on because we and sat down the back there and we're looking. And after about 10 minutes, I said, that's not flaggy. So I don't know whose wedding. We went to someone else's wedding too. No, that is a true story.
Yeah.
Yeah, went back a couple of times.
Well, that's a commendable effort. I sit there and I thought, shit, has he done this or is it
so
bullshit?
So you came down from Jerilderie after you went to Assumption College. Tell me if I've got any of this right or wrong.
No, you're right.
And then you, in 1986, I think you went to Geelong and they gave you a job as a groundsman just to pretend that you were working down there, Bill. And it all started from there. And what did you do? What did you cut the lawns there? Cut the actual oval you made yourself famous on or what?
David Bolton had just left and gone to Sydney. Yes, with Greg Williams and Bernard Toohey. Yeah. So, and the council owned the ground. So I just worked for the council on the ground, which was fantastic. So being a country boy, I got on the tracker, the tractor, and did a bit of work and mowed lawns and the cricket pitch and things like that. So I enjoyed that. But then I got into the bank, Sam, where a lot of your vintage footballers used to work
in
the bank, didn't they?
I worked in the bank,
I was in the State Bank.
Doug was in the commercial, the CBC, which is now something
Johnny
else.
Was handing out the payroll to the nurses at the
National Bank.
National Bank in Geelong.
Yeah,
exactly. So you didn't get that gig at the National Bank?
No, I was at the State Bank, which went under. But they were the good old days. They were,
before you got there, the word was coming out of Assumption. You kicked 150-odd goals. Yeah. Would that be right? What position were you in your final year?
Well, back pocket. No, I was full forward, I reckon, Don.
So why? Okay, so you've kicked you. So you're a schoolboy star. Schoolboy star. Hang on.
But this goals, he was
why did you forward. Go back to Geraldine and not go straight to Geelong?
Yeah, good question, that one. So I went to Assumption, and this is true. In year 11, I played about four games in the seniors under the great Ray Carroll, who was a great coach at Assumption, and I was no good. I was unco, and then I just got a bit more coordinated over the summer period, and in my final year, HSC back then, I kicked 155 goals, which was really good. I didn't pass school, but they passed me.
How many games did you play?
I would have played 20-odd. There was
so seven goals a game.
About that, enjoyed it, and then I was going to go to Geelong, but then I thought I'd just go home for a year because I hadn't played senior footy at Jerilderie. I wanted to go back. I still had mates there, so I made the decision to go back with mum and dad and my brothers and sister and play, just have a bit of fun playing senior footy back at Jerilderie. Which
did your brother Anson play?
No, he was in the Force. Yeah, Anson. Yeah.
So you played a year at Jerilderie.
Yeah.
What, you kicked the you topped the goal kicking there too, didn't you?
145. But it was quite interesting because I went back. I wasn't obviously a paid player. I was a local boy. I wasn't sure how well I'd go in senior footy and Jerilderie. And after nine games, I'd kicked 99 goals. And I still remember the local paper saying, can he keep it up and things like this, which was quite interesting. Mm. But it was quite big for just a local boy. Obviously, I loved the town and all that and had a good year, but we lost the grand final.
So you probably kicked 155 and 150 at Sumpson College because your great fear would have been called into one of the brother's or father's offices or studies to
be careful, Sam. Yeah.
Chat to you about why you hadn't kicked 160 goals, and you thought, if I get called into one of these offices, anything can happen. Sam. So I'll see if I can.
Sam. Morris brothers we had, and they love their footy and cricket. They love sports.
Christian brother's eyes.
We used to play jerks at Assumption. You know what
play
jerks?
What?
Jerks.
What jerks. What, in the boarding house?
No, Don. Jerks was an underarm game. Like it was a handball type thing, but you used to jerk it. So it was an underarm, you'd jerk it, and you're played in like squash courts.
You drifted onto it.
I,
You drifted onto a different thing. Well, Don,
like
I've
a squash
a
court. Yeah, I've seen CBC North Melbourne Parade at East Melbourne had one of those courts.
Yeah.
Is that called jerks?
Jerks, because you jerk it under your arm. It's an underarm throw. So you ask anyone that.
Like frisbees.
Yeah, but with a tennis ball. Yeah,
no, like squash or that other game they play with a scoop in Brazil or something.
Oh, lacrosse or no.
Don's perfected.
Barocca or something.
Don's perfected.
Hilo.
Don has perfected the art of jerks, but not with a tennis ball. Now, Bill.
Yes.
Bill.
Yes.
Who was the coach when you came down from Gerildry in 1986? Who was that?
John Devine had just been appointed coach because Tom Hafey had left to go to Sydney also.
So you didn't play under Tom, of course, because John was the... And John was probably not... didn't have all the modern techniques of what coaching was about, but... Necessarily, that doesn't make him unsuccessful, but he was unsuccessful because the side was unsuccessful.
Yeah, poor old Johnny had been out of the game. A great player for the Cats.
Great player. I played with him.
Premiership player, half-back flanker, tough and hard, and cut him in half and he bled blue and white. He loved the Cats. But he'd been out of the game for about 20 years. He'd been living over in Tasmania, a little place called Incestin. And he struggled. He did really struggle when he came back. So he came, did you get that, Don?
No, I'm still thinking about Hobart.
Anyway, he was appointed coach, and to be honest, at the time, Sam, he didn't get the support of the leaders at the club. The leaders, I still remember.
And who were the leaders?
Well, Mick Turner was our captain.
Oh, Mickey.
So John would pump us all up in the rooms and give us this big rah-rah chat. We'd run out in the ground and Mick would get us all and go, that's bullshit. Don't worry about that. We're not going to do that today. This is what we'd say. And so Mick, fair to say Mick and the late, great Paul Couch weren't his favourite players and they weren't supporters of him. So poor old Johnny, he just struggled for 3 years. Lovely fella, great Lovely. Family, but just struggled.
As we go, Don, I think probably the question of the half hour so far has been when Bill said he kicked 155 goals, you asked him what position was he playing at. I think that's probably...
Well, that could have been centre-half forward in the country. He could have, with a prodigious kick that he had and the shit football that existed up there, he could have been playing in the centre.
Take that on advice.
He could have been on the ball, he's such a big
man. It was just an unusual question, which I liked. What position were you playing when you kicked 155?
Well, he's a big man. I know. He would have been the biggest man playing.
There's nothing wrong with the question. It amused me.
Talking about you, didn't Mick Dowdle come from Gerildry?
Yeah, he did. Mick Dowdle did.
Who else came from Gerildry? He played for North Melbourne,
too. He did play for North Melbourne, yes. Who else? There hasn't been a lot that have come from Gerildry, you know. But Ned Kelly's our greatest story, of course. And as you said, when you go to the bakery, every country town's got a good bakery. You'd find that when you... I don't know what you do with the horses, but where do you take those horses?
I said Queensland, if you listen.
Yeah, but what are you doing with them?
Well, it's called show jumping, Billy.
That's a good sport.
Bill wouldn't have done a lot of show.
Well, you've got your RMs on. I thought you might have been a horseman, or is that just a legacy from your country?
That's a country roots, but you actually ride horses in show jumping.
Oh, no, Billy, what do you think I do with them?
How old are you?
Doesn't matter how old I am.
That's a good... Are you the oldest show jumper in Australia?
Not really, no. There's
you would be.
No.
I reckon
your son, Doug, just said you're the oldest show jumper. You're like John Gould.
You're
the John Gould of Australia.
So you're a cowboy?
No, I'm not a cowboy. Your father was a cowboy. I'm an equestrian.
Have you watched Yellowstone?
Yes.
They're cowboys, and that's what you are. You're a wrangler.
I'm fascinated by Yellowstone.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
It is, because I'm right into those.
What is Yellowstone?
Coming from the city, not usually into it. I'd be fascinated by those cowboys.
They own a ranch, well, the Duttons own this big ranch, and the Indians, those in Bow and Arrow Indians, are trying to take over the ranch, and then there's someone trying to build a city. Indians. So it's a good show, and they're all cowboys. They all work like you.
Did you ever go horses. Out? Did you ever go out stock drive with your father?
Yeah. Well, he used to run properties, so he.
Oh, so he wasn't on the road.
No. He was running like a manager.
Will
of
you
properties.
Two shut up? We're trying
What's
to have a conversation. What's
the name that's running?
Yeah, the old bloke.
No.
Vaughn
Green.
No.
No. The The father current actor at the minute. Yeah. Gee, we shouldn't. He made Waterworld.
Yeah.
What? Kevin Costner.
Yeah, that's
Thank you.
They're very good too.
So were you on the road with your father, or he wasn't a stockman?
No, he was a manager of property. So he managed a property between Deniliquin and Moolamine. We used to up at the back of Burke at a place called, terrible joint. Really hot. Wilcannia and things like that. So that's
now, do you want a bit of useless information? Do you know a place called Mirror up that way?
Mirror.
Mirrar. Yeah. My grandfather played in its first football team. Jeez. Just below Griffith.
Yeah, I know where you are. That's that way. I'm talking.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a bit of useless information.
So when
you cut this stuff out, or we go with a whole lot of it?
So we talk shit, Billy.
So Bill,
yes.
When John Devine left Geelong after 3 years, was taken over by Gary? No, who?
No, Malcolm Blight.
Malcolm Blight. So. Now, mate, if you're talking about I've never played, I know Malcolm Blight, not well, but I've never played under him, of course, but he was diverse, lateral, and almost, he was almost weird, which is not a criticism necessarily, but he was lateral.
He'd go well on this show, but what he was you just didn't know what he was going to do. Exactly right, Sam. He was out there, but a super player and a super coach, which doesn't always happen.
And would tell you.
Yeah, and he'd love to talk and still would be – he'd have a red wine and tell you for 4 hours how good he was. But you know what – and a smoke, yeah, you're right. But what – the good super players like him who won a McGarry medal and a Brownlow medal and kicked 100 in both states, they don't make good coaches. The best coaches, as you boys all know, are the back pockets, aren't they?
The battlers.
The battlers, exactly. But he was a superstar.
Polly.
Yeah.
See, he wasn't a good coach.
No, that's right.
But a great player.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
So there's not – Lee Matthews is probably the only other one, I reckon, that have been super players and super coaches. But I love Blighty because what he loved and his mantra was to kick goals quickly and to kick more goals than the opposition. So he wouldn't care if they kicked 20. We'd kick 22. Whereas then Gary Ayres come in and he was a defensive player and a defensive coach. Keep the opposition to 10 and we'll kick 12. So Blighty just loved kicking goals, plenty of goals, and having fun and enjoying it. Now, I know we played in 3 grand finals and lost 3 grand finals, but shit, we had some good times. And we had some really, really good wins over those times.
What position did you play?
Well, Ablett played forward, forward.
Stoneham was up there
Stoneham
as well.
Stoneham was centre forward, so I was the floater a bit.
Well, where were you?
Half forward flank, pocket.
So you weren't where the action was. You were just kind of...
I was a decoy. I was a decoy. Oh, decoy.
No, but don't undersell yourself, but I know that Dablett was the focus. Now, what... none of us... I don't think you... We've never played with, obviously, Ablett. Mm. Just what was it like to be on the field with probably the most legendary person for whatever reason that's ever played the game, whether you think he's the best or not's irrelevant, but what was it like to play with him on the field?
Yeah, it was great to run out with him. He didn't listen to the coaches, you know, and he didn't know his opposition. I still remember Malcolm Blight asking him about, I think he was playing on fullback, and Blighty just said, tell us about Darren Gasper. He had no idea. Who? What? He had no idea. Mick Martin. He knew Mick a bit and he knew Spud because he used to play on Spud. Spud, to his credit, used to do a really good job on Gazza because Gazza used to try and wrestle Spud and Spud was a big boy, you know. Mick Martin, he knew him a bit, but the others he had no idea. And he would just run his own race. And I still remember one day at MCG when Mick Turner and I and Gazza are just standing around, the ball's up the other end, and this is true. Mick said, mate, we need a goal here. We're in a bit of trouble. We need a goal here. So Gazza goes, all right, jogs off, gets a ball, has a couple of bounces and kicks a goal. He could just do things when he wanted. He'd turn up, he'd kick goals, he'd do some unbelievable things. He was so powerful. He only needed a couple of metres and he'd run into blokes and really hurt them. He could kick left foot and right foot just nearly as good, and you never saw him practice left foot. He was very strong, but he never did any weights. He was a terrible trainer, you know, and things like that. Just could play footy.
Very strong, and he could hurt people. You were one of them, I think, in one training routine back at the club. when you did a little boxing with him.
Yes, well.
I know these are sports night stories, and I've told most of mine on this thing here because we're not going out and doing it. But no. you must tell us because it's a very humorous story, and it's true.
Well, it is true. Now, we used to have these sparring sessions back in the day, Don, and you would have done that. I don't know how you'd go, but old horse rider. But Gazza was a terrible trainer. He'd run a couple of laps. He'd have 10 or 15 shots at goal, because you could back then. And then he'd go up to either John Devine or Gary Ayres or Malcolm Blight, and he'd say, geez, I'm a bit sore in the hammy. The coaches would shit themselves because they'd think, oh, no, he's not going to play. Go indoors, Gaz. And anything indoors, he was unbelievable. Indoor cricket, valued his wicket, would never go out. Indoor soccer, he'd kick some of the best goals you ever seen because he was so powerful. And he loved his boxing. And he could really go because there's great stories.
Don't worry, they're both, all the Ablets could go.
Yeah, that's right. And Druin, from Lenny and all of them. There's great stories there. So they could all fight. We used to have these sparring sessions and I, to be honest, can't fight. I'm not a romantic. I don't know what I'm doing on this fucking earth, to be honest. But anyway, I come in early one day and Gazza sees me and says, Bill, do you want to have a spa? I said, oh, yeah, that sounds all right. So I got the gear off and I'm lying in the spa. And he comes over and says, no, dickhead, come here. Now, this is a true story, Don. So the late Philip Walsh was our boxing coach at the time. So he's got this fandangle machine that goes off every 2 minutes, two-minute rounds. So we got the gloves on, we got the helmet on, and a few boys are gathered around doing their weights. And Gazza there, and he looks good, and I'm just trying to throw a couple, and he's looking really good and all that, anyway, ding, 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 this machine goes off after 2 minutes. So I've got one two-minute round, I'm out of here. Shower up, I know. Second round starts, and he loves Muhammad Ali, so he's got the fist waving around, and I'm watching that, and he go bang, bang. And so he could really, you know, you could tell he could fight. True as I sit here, I throw this left jab that hits him flush on the chin and drops him. Not many have hit him in the chin. No one has ever dropped him. And he's on the ground. So I shit myself, to be honest. And I walk over there, and there's a bit of water there. He might have slipped. But anyway, he's on the ground. And I look, and he looks up, and he bounces up. He's ready to rock and roll now. He gets up. He beats the living suitcase out of me. Uppercuts, hooks, bunny chops, whatever he could throw. He's throwing everything. And I couldn't get – the boys saw this was what was happening. So they formed a circle around us in this gym, and I couldn't get out of that circle. He punched the living shit out of me. Oh, mate, I was in trouble. And Philip Walsh had to jump over this circle and pull him off – well, pull him away because he was going berserk. Yeah, well, he was, mate, on fire. So I limp out of there. I went into the bathroom. I still remember it. I got my gloves off. Do you reckon I could get my helmet off? He'd punch me that hard. I was that swollen and blood. I couldn't get the helmet off my head. Oh, he could go. He could go.
Hey, really. Listen, did Ayrsie give you the arse at 30 or did you retire at 30?
You liked that story, did you, Don? Yeah.
had you just finished... You'd finish the...
yes, he gave me the ass.
So you'd finish the story about him punching you and you got in the showers and you apologised.
But didn't he also knock out Lester Ellis once?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Oh, but hang on, there's be a big weight discrepancy there. Lester Ellis.
Yeah, he did knock... he didn't knock out Lester Ellis. We had a promotion at Market Square in Geelong, Sam, and they promote... Lester Ellis was fighting and going very well at the time. And he came to Geelong to try and pump up support and things like that. And they had it at the Market Square. And on the day that was there, Dwayne Russell was the ring announcer and he took on a couple of blokes. And there was 4,000 people at Market Square because the Geelong boys were fighting Lester Ellis. There are only little sparring sessions. So I think Tim McGrath got in with Lester Ellis and Lester Ellis just gone bang, 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 bang. got rid of him. He was no good. Then someone else come in and Lester just went bang, bang, bang. And then Gazza. So, and it was only supposed to be 1 2-minute round. And as you said, the weight, Gazza was very heavy, Lester was very light. But they went for it, mate. And they were going for it. And Gazza's getting, and you could hear Lester going, oh, because he's hitting him in the guts. And anyway, one round, ding, 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 the bell goes. Gazza says, we're going again. So they had another round, mate. And it got fair dinkum. And Gazza could hold his own. He was a lot bigger, I'll give you that. But that was on, mate. That was on. He didn't knock him out, but he certainly got the points on him. No, he could fight Gazza, yeah. So, what'd you say? Yeah, it's Gary Ayres did give me the ass.
Yeah. So you saw off John Devine,
yep.
Malcolm Blight, and yep. Gary was your last
yes, coach.
So you
yeah.
were three of them.
Yep.
I had seven when I was at John.
Seven?
I think I had seven, five or six. Six, seven. Anyhow, so why, Don?
And yeah, I was just going to say, well, what did you think you could play on? Or did
At the time, I thought I could go one more year because I'd played 198 games. So to play one more year, get two more senior games. I was happy to play in the reserves and help the boys out there. I just loved the club and loved playing. And of course, the money was okay, to be honest. So that's why you want to hang around. But Ayrsy, to his credit, he called me in. I still remember, I walked in, I had this A4 page of stuff I'd be good for. Hang on, two more games, I'd be great for the twos and all that stuff. He goes, Bill, we've made a decision and we're not going with you next year. That's it, done. You got anything to say? I had this A4 paper and I go, just fold it up. I said, no, all right, Ayrsy, no worries. I didn't even say anything, weak as piss I was. He gave me an ass. But that, looking back, and I had a bad ankle at the time and things like that. I was disappointed at the time, but when you look back, it's a right call.
Why did you always play well against Footscray?
It's funny how you play well against some different sides. I struggled against West Coast Eagles and unfortunately played in two grand finals against them because Ashley McIntosh used to pick me up and he was...
Yeah. Pretty negative.
Yeah, but also he's strong and tall and quick and just... beat me every time. But then when I played Footscray, there was a couple of, they didn't really have a matchup for me. So, and the best fullback or at the time, who it was, they'd go
Rick
on
Kennedy?
Ablett. I played on him early days, Rick Kennedy. He's the most scariest man I've known on the field. He belted me one day, and they say you see stars. I actually saw stars.
He picked an easy mark, didn't he?
Oh, well, my third game, I reckon, down at Geelong. And I'm 18, skinny. I jog down there and I'm looking at him and I just shit myself when I saw him because he's screaming at his own teammates. What are you doing, you dickhead? And all this. And I go, oh, no. And sure enough, he gave me one back. But that was interesting. But some teams you played well against. You were confident going into the game and you knew you were going to go well.
So Gary Ayres might have done you a favour, Bill, because probably you were thinking after your football career was over like I was. Mind you, I went into business with Doug Wade for a decade, selling hairdressing supplies to ladies' beauty salons and that.
Married at the time.
Married at the
What's
time.
What's Doug's brother's name? He listens to this podcast.
Dennis. Well done. He will become half firm listening to this because we mentioned him at the start of the first thing we did. And if you mention him again, he will have just blown out in the front of his jodhpurs now something savage. So, Bill, he might have done you a favour, Gary Ayres, because while you were wondering what the hell you'd do after this, this launched you into a great career of like me being just a tomfoolery and being a fuckwit. You've capitalised on it beautifully, Bill. So what did you do after you got the flick?
Well, I was on about, I reckon, when did I get the ass?
98.
Yeah,
98 you would have started in the real world.
I reckon I was on about 100 grand, 110,000 at the time, and I worked at the footy club for 30,000. So you go from 110 down to 30. So I needed something.
Plus a car,
yes, you're right, which was a Holden Camira. And they've been sponsored for Ford for 100 years. Yeah, but you know who it was? Tony McGuinness's car, because the Cats thought they'd got him. Yep. And they'd sent him over a car, and I got it, and it was wrecked, let me tell you. Well, it was quite – I got it anyway. Anyway, but so I was on 30 grand. I needed something, and I don't know how they picked me for the footy show, to be honest, Sam, but because there was no other shows, obviously, back then. And we used to do one, I reckon, chat after the games. Someone would come into the rooms and interview you and things like that. Yep. So there was hardly any interviews and someone must have seen it. Anyway, I was asked to come onto the show and I still remember driving up from Geelong, because Geelong's a fair way apart. At least you guys in Melbourne see each other when you can get out. But back then you'd bump into each other. We were down, fair way away. And I'm driving up and you're thinking, geez, Eddie McGuire and Sam, he's a dickhead, Sam, mate. Because that's what everyone thought. He's a dickhead. And then you got
thank you, Bill.
Trevor, who's very, very funny, and Ed and all that. And, geez, it was...
What they think of me again, Bill?
You're a dickhead. Not much has changed. No, but it was interesting times. And you walk in there and you just see you guys, and you would, you'd shit yourself sitting down and preparing for a meeting, and Eddie yelling at Ralph, and and you having a bottle of red wine, Foss.
We used to drink before.
We did, until that got canned after Sam had three bottles one day before the show. And it was good red too, wasn't it?
Beautiful.
But thank God I did that. I really enjoyed that. That was because we were, to be honest, like a family, weren't we, Sam?
We were.
We were all good friends and used to look after one another. And we'd all laugh at each other's joke and help one another out. And it was a really good family, the good old days.
So there was Silly Shane, who we've had on here, was a star, and you, and myself and Ed. And then they started up this was it Shane's idea? Who started up the House of Bulger? The footy show had plans that was going to be Dark Days of Our Lives. That was going to be whether we were on the show or not. We were actually going to make a soapy out of that.
Yeah, we were.
And
it went all right for a season or two.
Then they realised.
What about the makeup? We're all in. I was.
Joy Bell.
Joy Bell, and you were my.
Father.
No, husband.
Oh, was I?
You were my husband. Joy Bell was a female, and I was married to you, remember?
That's right. But yeah, true.
Yeah. But remember the makeup and the stuff we had to we had to get dressed up and the makeup. And
people thought that they're actually making a film and that's their job and that's their livelihood. And they thought, we better not stuff this up. We sat there getting made up. I said, just put the wig on. Who cares if it's on straight or not? We're meant to be taking the piss out of it. No, they said, no, shit. We had manicurists and people us.
We'd do the scene five or six times how you had to look. And, and mate, they did take it very seriously, probably too serious. But that was Shane. Shane wanted to do that. Shane thought... He still thinks he's a producer, actually.
That's right.
And an actor.
And The Rock, that's what we had shown on there. The Rock, what's his name? Dwayne Johnson.
Was he in it?
He was on it.
He wasn't.
He fucking was,
Bill. He must have made a guest appearance.
He did. He made a guest. He was out
here. Well, he would have had to make a guest appearance. I don't know. I didn't see him on it every week.
No. And he kicked 200 goals in a scratch match playing at centre-half back. Now, Bill, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
No.
Don't say no. He was on it. That's before he was even known. Shane reckons he catapulted him into stardom.
Jeez, I cannot remember.
He was on as a guest.
You were pissed.
Well...
He was.
Well, used to be a bit. We had some good female girls on it too, some good actresses, didn't we? We used to walk around the bikini sandwich.
That's right.
We didn't know where to look, did we, honestly?
We knew where to look, actually, Bill. We looked very, very... We knew exactly where to look. And Bill So things then, it was all loose then, and then it tightened up for the broadcasting tribunal, and then a political correctness started to creep in, and you used to go out for this great segment, probably along with Street Talk, probably the most popular segment on the footy show called Where's the Wheel? You used to go out and spin the wheel out at country venues to raise money for, which was fantastic, to raise money, put it back into country football. Mm. And you used to get hammered, Bill. You used to get out there. And then they said, we cannot have Bill pissed too many times on air, too many shows a year. So we had to wrestle the chalice and the beer out of your hand just to keep you compos mentis on most of those things. But it was very popular, wasn't it, Bill's Wheel?
I love doing that, Sam, because we didn't know where we were going. They'd roll it the week before and I'd end up somewhere. And I went to Tasmania. They loved it down there. Any of the footy states, they loved it. And you go out to country Victoria and it'd be the biggest thing they've had all year at the footy club, because it just wouldn't be the footy club that would be there. The whole town would come. So you'd have old Knackers' pub. He'd have the kegs there. So they'd buy the grog off him and they'd run out about 9 o'clock, so he'd have to run down and get some more grog.
What was his name? Old Knackers.
Then you'd have the Lions Club be cooking the barbecue, and mate, and the butcher would be there pissed because he gave them some free meat. So that would be going berserk, and they'd make money there. They'd have $5 to get in or $10 to get in through the door. The footy club would make money there. So you'd have the whole town there. And I would rock up there. And, of course, it was like Santa coming to town. They were so hospitable.
Hospitable.
Hospitable. Thank you, Sam. Mm. Not the hospital.
Yeah. Sound like Don. Why didn't you pull him up?
Well, because I'm just about to, but he corrected himself, Don.
Yeah. So I'd turn up and they'd buy you beers. You know, they'd have blokes would be giving you beers. And then the two blokes on the front door, a couple of local blokes, Spanner and Shifter. And you'd have a beer with Spanner and you'd have a beer with Shifter.
Shifter had played on the wing at Geelong. Did Darren you know Ellen. That?
Yeah, I'll shift to Sheehan.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. So, and they'd tell you how good the ground was and the lights and who used to play there at this local footy club. And then I'd walk from the front door to the bar. And this is true. At every footy club, you'd run into two blokes that should have been and could have been the greatest players ever. If only one was out spotlighting one night and shot his foot off, and the other bloke was on the header helping the old man and he cut his foot off. So, mate, you'd run into them and have a beer, and then you'd go up to the bar, and that would be a bloke who played 300 games for the seniors and 200 in the reserves and was a president and the treasurer. Oh, so you'd run into all these people that were of something of the town, you know. It was fantastic. And what the footy, because it went pretty well and popular, the footy show used to put it back. So I used to, you know, we'd be on it back then at 9:30. You wouldn't get on to about 10:30, right? And you'd be half pissed because you'd had an hour of having a crack or 2 hours, you know. But then they put it back because it was popular. And, of course, later it went back, the more pissed I'd get. So it'd turn up and, it'd turn in. There was no security. I had one bloke that would drive the truck out there who liked a bit of a smoke, the old hoochie-coochie. And I'd go open the truck door and there'd be all smoke like Cheech and Chong, smoke everywhere. I'd go, mate, we're on in a minute. So he'd come on, here's my security guard. I had one camera bloke. You'd have the president's wife.
Yep.
She'd be all dolled up because you'd run into the president. And normally the president's the little fat back pocket, you know, who played reserves and is a drunk, is a piss pot of the club. And he's not having a drink tonight because he's on national television. So he was boring as batshit. But his wife, she had a crack. She'd done the hair, had it all grey. She'd been drinking cheap red wine, you could see it on her lips, and she'd been to the local hardware shop and bought a new frock, you know, for the night. So, but that's true. She'd want to get on TV. Oh, so fair dinkum, the people you'd meet, and it'd be fantastic. And you'd spin the wheel. It'd be only on for 3 or 4 minutes, and every time they'd come to me, I'd be standing there ready to go, and people would be trying to jump in, and every time they'd say, "Bill, hurry up, we're running late tonight." And I'd stand there and go, "Well, it's not my fucking fault that you're running late. I've been standing there all night. You blokes have been talking shit." Oh, geez, it was funny. But then,
listen, the best interview I ever saw of you was when you're going for politics. You knew fuck all about the subject. And I think you changed parties too, didn't you?
Well, I used to change. I was a swinger. swinging voter.
Oh, voter.
Yeah, because I went with we had the premiers who were very good Geelong supporters. Ted Bayou, great Geelong supporter. Steve Brax, great Geelong supporter. Different parties there. So,
and Felicity Kennett, she was number one ticket holder there for a while.
Jeffrey was a premier, and we got on to Felicity. And we put her in the Geelong jumper, as everyone used to do on the footy show, and parade them around in the Essendon jumper or the Carlton or whatever. We had her in the Geelong jumper, and she was fantastic. She used to come down to the president's lunch, her and Jeffrey, and they'd sit there and drink, have no idea who won or how much or where. But Jeff was good for the city, and Felicity was very good for us. She was great. So we enjoyed her company, Flicker. Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought your interview was just sensational when they interviewed. You were a candidate. What, with Liberal or Labor?
Well, Jeffrey...
Country Party?
No, well, Jeffrey asked me to run for North Geelong, right? So North Geelong was dominated by Peter Loney, who's a big Labor seat out there.
He used to be Nipitrisized, and then he took over from Gordon... used to be the Speaker of the House, Gordon. I should know his name. And anyhow, it was a stronghold Labor.
Stronghold Labor. Yep. And what Jeffrey wanted me was to stand out there and take votes off Labor. Probably couldn't win it, but he said, if you get in, Bill, and this is true, I had to go to his office. This is when I got doorstopped, but I went up to his office with Ian Cover, and he offered me $100,000 payment two receptionists who would take the calls. The calls wouldn't get
Hang
through
on,
to
is
me.
That, what Les is an Patterson MP or like? Just a running candidate?
No, as if I got in, if I got
oh,
in.
Oh, if yeah, you got yeah, in, yeah, right.
Yeah. So two PAs that would take the calls so they wouldn't come through to me. And I'd get a car. It was a magnificent package. And we're up there in his beautiful office, and I still remember the memorabilia and the nice table, which I think he might have kept a bit of it. But anyway, so we had a good meeting. And then I come out of the meeting with Coves, come down in Spring Street there, and, of course, there's some media got hold of it. But these weren't the sporting media or the football media. They were political media, and they had these questions that I still don't know the fucking answer to. And it's called door-stopping, is because you shouldn't stop, and I stopped. I should have just kept walking and said, no comment, no comment. But I stopped, and then they just went. They couldn't wait to ask me. And I'm looking at Coves. He's giving me nothing. And so I decided then and there that politics wasn't for me.
So then you decided, you were asked, obviously, couldn't go if you weren't, to go over into the jungle, Bill. Why did you go over to do that? Did you enjoy it? Did it change your life? Did you regret doing it? What?
Well, the jungle came out of nowhere, to be honest, Sam. I used to watch those shows and goes, look at those dickheads on TV.
Hang on, why did you... You were at 9 then and that's on 10?
Yes.
So wasn't there a conflict?
There was, but I went and saw 9 because...
Dispensation?
Yeah, exactly. Shane got the same too when he did it. Because we're coming towards the end of our careers and... they let you do a few little things like that, which was nice and 9 at the time to do it. But this is only, start of this year. But I still remember management rang me and said, Bill, they want you to go in the jungle. It might be good for you. You might get off the piss for a while. You'll lose some weight. And the money's quite good. And I said, bullshit. I watch those shows. They're terrible. I can't watch them, those B-grade celebrities walking around and all that. But anyway, they rang back, said, Bill, this is the last time we'll ask you. It might be good. Have a think about it. And it was during January, which is not a bad time to probably get off the piss. So I thought, not bad. I'll get off the piss. I might lose some weight. And the money was all right. So I said, all right, we'll go. We'll have a chat to him. So I had a chat to him. I had to go up to Sydney and do all that and the testing. And then I was on. I was in. So I wasn't
you had to keep mum. You weren't allowed to tell anyone.
Not allowed to tell anyone at all. I might have told a couple of people when I was on the piss. But anyway, I told my daughters who were very happy. They thought that'd be good because it was big on social and they might get some hits or likes or whatever. So, but I did it. And it wasn't out the back of Tarnit, which a lot of people are aware of me. A lot of people think it was. We actually had to fly to Africa. I went to Johannesburg, got in another plane and flew an hour from there to the actual jungle, the real jungle, the not Kakadu Park. What's it called over there? The big wildlife park.
Johnny's been to 3 of them. Come on, Johnny. There you go.
Yeah,
anyway, we know where it is.
Yeah, and we had to. Then we'd have to travel by bus from the airport where we were, and it was really deep, dark African jungle. Feeding, I thought, and what you saw on the show is what you got. There was we just in a had a campfire. We slept on these army style beds. You had a sleeping bag. You ate whatever was on the show, which I hear stories about Warney getting pizzas and delivered and all that. There was none of that for us.
Kruger, Kruger
that's it, yeah, Kruger National Park, yep. We're right there. Yep. And it was bloody boring because you had nothing to do. Our biggest things, if you didn't do a test or whatever,
challenge,
the biggest thing was we'd go down to the waterfall and swim in the waterfall or we'd get wood for the fire. They were our two biggest things for the day.
Were you mic'd up all the time?
Who
were you
time.
With? Who were the other people on?
Daisy Thomas.
Yep.
Yeah, who's a good fella. Rhonda, red hot Rhonda. Rhonda Birchmore was a beauty. Yep. We thought she'd be prim and proper, and then she farted one night, did the old pull me finger and farted. We thought, yes, good on you, Rhonda. How good are you, Rhonda? She was fantastic. Charlotte from...
Rhonda farted.
Yes, she did. That's got her into the group. You know how little things can get you into the group? And she did, Rhonda. She was fantastic. Who else is on there?
Anyway, overseas?
Charlotte from... What's that?
Group?
No. She's Geordie Shore. One of those.
Geordie Shore.
Yeah, she was fan. She was great fun too. And so we had a good time. But I got the third one out. I thought I might have stayed a bit longer, to be honest. But I got the arse pretty quickly.
Who didn't you like, Bill?
I didn't like that Perez. That he's a
Perez Hilton.
Prez Hilton, yeah, who came in late and he does write stuff about celebrities. What do you call that? Yeah, does that.
Gossip columnist.
Gossip, yeah, that's it. Yeah. Foss, exactly. So, and he was just, no, he just didn't fit in. And I didn't probably get on with a couple of the younger girls in the in the camp because we're different eras. Different eras. So it was good fun. I'm glad I did it because it got you out of your little bubble, out of your...
Yep.
And it was good to do.
Can I ask you a serious question? Football. Jeez, your daughter still goes out with Paddy Cart?
Yeah,
what's Paddy happening? McCart. Yeah, what's happening with him?
Paddy, obviously, concussion. Is not with St Kilda anymore. But was going to play footy this year because he just wants
what,
to
get locally?
Locally, yeah, maybe at Geelong. Or he was training up at Sydney in the academy mob there because his brother plays, Tom plays for Sydney. So he's having a bit of run around there.
Will he come back?
He wants to. I'm not sure, to be honest. It's always a worry because he's only 23, so he's only young and he wants to play again because he just wants to play footy. But it is a worry, his concussion and how easy he did. You know, it's only a pretty easy knock and he was in a bit of trouble. So I think he'll try and come back again. I don't know how he'll go.
And what about your son?
Oscar's at Geelong. Yeah. He's rookie listed this year. I thought he might have been a chance because he's a good runner. So believe it or not, he's not as tall as me, but he's a very good runner and he plays more mid, wing, half back, half forward. And I thought he might have been a chance maybe to get a run this year with the Cats when they had 5 games in 20 days. You know, but they were playing so well and they got no injuries. You know, and then I have a look who's on the wing and you got Mark Blitzars and Menengola and these guys. He's not going to get a game there. So he loves it, but he's up in the hub with them and all that. But
now just a couple more, Bill.
It's been long.
You'll probably anticipate what the last question I'm going to ask is, but the penultimate question, Bill.
Which is the Sunday
footy show is... the footy shows started the grand final footy shows back when I think Ted Whitten was on the Sunday footy show back in 93 and we did a Sunday footy show grand final special and it went that well. That's when that started the foray into going to Rod Laver Arena and selling that out for 24 or 5 odd years.
How big were those shows? Weren't they unbelievable?
They're extraordinary. Yeah. And the people that put them on, the staff and the production crew... Yeah. To do it live is world-class. No one understands
that.
No, it was just world-class stuff. In fact, probably as good as any...
Yes.
Anyhow.
Yep.
So the Sunday footy show is doing a grand final footy show.
Yeah.
I'm told, aren't I?
On a Friday night before the grand final.
That would be before the grand final, Bill. Yeah, that'd be on Saturday. So where are you doing that? Do we know that where you're doing that?
No, Well, last year we did it and it went okay. This year they have been talking about it. Nothing's finalised yet.
Because of the COVID.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's up in the air.
And so can I ask you a question here? Is it, what, at the tennis centre?
No. It's
not
a smaller...
Not allowed to have any people.
People.
Any crowd done because of the lockdown.
But it's nothing like the Thursday night one. It's a lot smaller show.
Celebrating the game and the night grand final. And it's probably done the competition a favour, the COVID, because it's if you can get anything out of it, it's given the game a free... Belt up in the northern states.
Rugby states,
The rugby states. And
I like it. And a night game. We can have a look at a night grand final. I think a lot of people...
Great excuse to give it a chance.
That's right. Have a look at different things, which they have this year with the close games in... As Geelong played 5 games in 20 days.
Now, Bill...
They'll do that next year.
We don't... You know I'm going to ask you this, so...
I've been waiting.
Well, but mate... Seriously.
Yeah.
People would just want to know how you and Gary Lyon are going.
Yeah.
And I remember when we addressed the great sort of warding off on the footy show, it was just we thought we should do it because, look, we're only people and these things happen. Yeah. How are you going and how did it affect you and where are you now in life with all that?
Look, and as I spoke before, we were a good family, and we were a close family, weren't we?
We were very close.
We were, and we all were, and Jim and Gaz and Shane and me and you and
yep.
And we used to go out for dinners.
We went over for Gary Lyon's 40th over to Las Vegas. Nearly killed me. I nearly came back in a body bag because I was 20 years older than all you blokes and you ran me into the ground.
Yeah. We did. And so we were very close. So that was a shame that that all blew up because it blew up a few things, didn't it, really?
Blew up a lot of things.
Mm. So that was a shame. And look, at the time, you go through all different emotions, of course, about why me and then, a bit of hatred, of course. Yep. But now, mate, it's been 4 or 5 years. Yep. I've come around and everyone's in a good spot, to be honest. Yep. So and Gary and Nikki are, that's fine. Yep. The kids are, because that was the other big problem. Because the kids were at that age of, young Maxie was about 10 and Oscar was about 14 and the girls are, you know, 16, 17. So that was a real, because it was so public.
Yep.
That was the biggest problem. It was so public, you know, on TV, in the papers, front page of the Geelong Addy, things like that. So it was really, it was hard at the time because it was so public and I'd walk into a coffee shop and I swear that everyone was looking at me and talking about it. And they weren't, but you just get, I don't know.
So are you genuinely back? Friends with Gary? And
no, we've spoken a couple of times.
Yes.
You know, and
never be the same, probably.
Probably, but...
Probably, might be.
It might be, yeah. And, mate, and there's no Christmas cards yet, but we have spoken and you know, the kids live with Gary and Nikki and things like that. So there's no problems. We're in good space. He's in a good space. Nikki is. The kids are. And so am I. I'm, you know, so, but that's taken time.
Yeah, of course. Time is a great healer, Bill, as we say.
No, that is so true. Yes. It really is.
I was told it'd take 6 years, Billy, and I reckon it took 6 years.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. Someone told me two. And
two?
Two wasn't right. No, it wasn't two,
mate. Did you say, Don?
Someone told me, I experienced it, 6 years.
Well, what did you experience,
six, Don? 6 years for me.
6 years, yeah.
Did someone, what did you experience? I'm not serious.
Same as Billy.
Yeah. So you separated, I reckon five. I reckon five. And, you're in a good spot.
But you're only four.
A bit longer, I reckon, five. Okay. Yeah. So, no, good spot. Was yours a nasty...
When there's emotion involved, I can appreciate where you're at.
Yeah.
And, and you don't see it coming.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, and it's always the one that's left that has got to carry the burden of it. And so... Yeah, there's emotional involvement. Mm. Shut up, will you, please?
No, I'm asking a question. You haven't experienced what Bill does. You've separated from your wife like I have. But he
didn't see it coming.
Mm. Well, so it doesn't matter whether you're in the public eye or not.
Yeah, I know.
You don't see it coming, do you?
No, that's right. And it was hard because you're out there and you swear people are talking about you or whatever. And they're not. They're, you know, so and then people have got to take sides too. That's the other thing. Your friends... You know, they're in the wife's or the in-laws, and there's all really close friends. Which side do they go with? And your kids and things like that. So it's interesting time. So,
well, Bill, you've like all of us, we've been through the mill and we've come out the other side. Some of us,
how long did it take you to get over
them? What's the time? About a minute? No, seriously. Yeah. No, it is it doesn't matter who you are. It is a great shock when it happens. No matter how it happens, it is a great shock and it takes you a while to get over it. Now, Bill.
Yes.
You are a star and you're a star. I'll tell you why you're a star, Don, a bit like us.
I've got some questions for you.
Oh, good on you.
Some myths.
Yeah. What are they?
Mythology.
Only one with you, Don, which I'll ask you in a minute. But Foss.
You've come prepared, Bill. This is extraordinary.
You're a Geelong grammar.
More prepared than Don.
Geelong grammar boy. And you were very clever at school, weren't you? You were. I know your dad was the headmaster, but you were very smart. And you know, you can do the roll call.
Yes.
What year is it?
1963 roll call.
Do the roll call of.
Oh, you
have you done this? Oh yeah, it's right. Don't worry about that. Did you once kick 18 goals for the grammar?
No, I did.
You actually kicked. Yeah, full forward or ruck?
Centre half forward. Yeah.
You did kick 18
goals.
Yeah.
What in the school match?
Yeah,
in school
match. A house match or
no? It was inter school match.
Inter school.
Yeah. School match.
Jeez.
Was it true that Bob Davis did say, you got to get the boy from the grammar?
Yes, he did. He came out there after it might have been the week after I'd kicked 18 goals. He came out with Leo O'Brien.
Yes.
And in those days, our The road into the school and around the school wasn't bituminized. It wasn't
Bitumen.
Bitumen.
Mm.
Bituminized is the word.
Right.
And there's an oak tree there. And Bob came in one of Ford's Fairlanes. This is a 1963 a Fairlane, which is a big car. And he came in around there, and he did a He did a broadside round the oak tree, and the dust. And the time the dust went up from the road and it settled down, Bob got out of the car and he said, "Where is the boy?" He said, "He's got it. We got to get him into the football club." Leo O'Brien. So they gave me Polly Farmer's training jumper.
That was it. That's all you
that
got.
That was a Polly Farmer's training jumper. Enticed me to come in.
What, I had
to
get number 5 on the back.
Yeah, that was his number 9. And I had to get permission from the school to go and play the last 3 games in the reserves to qualify to play in the reserves grand final in 1963, along with the seniors who played and won it in 63. And that's how I started. And I haven't still got it. I wish I had it.
Mm. Did you play 300 or 303 games for Geelong?
It's a very good question. When you played a state game and you were absent from the playing in a home and away game, they credited you, because you obviously would have got a game, but they credited you with playing a game.
Right.
So I played 300 games exactly, actually,
with
home and away games, but they added 3 other games on when they coincided with the side playing for the state game and you weren't available for a home and away game. So I played my 300th game.
In a dressing gown.
Yes, I played my 300th game against Collingwood in 1980 and then went on to play 3 more games after that, which the 300th game I played was as a result of giving me the 3 games that I missed out on. Well, so I played 300 actual games, but I'm credited with playing 303 because my last game was out at Waverley in 1980 against Footscray. Yeah, and so that was my ostensibly 303rd game.
In your 300th game, you were in a dressing gown for most of it?
No, not for most of it. I started on the bench in my dressing gown. Bill Goggin was the coach, an amateur psychologist. He thought this would be a good thing to do, start a man playing his 300th game on the bench. That would get him up and about and motivated. So I sat on the bench for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Then I came on to the ground and played on a man we've had here and interviewed, Renee Kink, who played centre-half back for Collingwood, and I stayed on the whole game, and we won the game. So that's
The David Swartz incident with the pie in the face, that was set up, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
And you got death threats.
I got because people I said to David, I'm not sure that David concedes this now. He probably does now because I've let it out of the bag. But I was happy for him to take the credit that he belted me and pushed me over. But if you think that we would ask players to come in and make that bigger fools out of them or embarrass them like that, we just wouldn't. Well, I wouldn't do
that. And the pie was there, so it was the pie.
We got the pie, and we said, "Mate, can I push this into your face?"
Yeah.
He said, "Do you mind that?" He said, "No, not at all." And I thrust it in a bit hard.
You did.
And he probably got surprised.
And
then he pushed me, and I did the beautiful reverse somersault and back pike into the wall, knowing that it was made out of plasterboard and I wouldn't hurt myself. So I was very happy for him to say, just to let the myth be extended. I was very happy to say that that was real, but it wasn't real. Well, it was real, but I told him I was going to do it.
Righto. Hey, Don, I used to barrack.
Oh, Billy.
I barracked for Hawthorn as
really?
A kid. I love the Hawks. Ali DeWald, Kelvin Moore.
Good man.
Can't remember who was in the other back pocket. Then you had
The General.
Ian Payton. And then
Payton in back pocket.
O'Halloran. Sent off back Peter Knights. I had 24 on my back. I love Knights.
Oh,
Knights,
yeah.
And then Alan Goad and Rodney Eade and Terry Wallace and Bomber Henry and all that. So, But the best midfield line of all time, obviously, was Scott Tuck and Matthews.
Midfield? Following
ball,
division.
Following division, whatever you call it. Yeah. But you guys, you never spoke to them.
No.
That's strange, isn't it?
No, Tucky's all right.
But at the time, when you played together, the greatest combination ever...
Mm.
You never spoke to Lee Michael.
Lee wasn't one of the boys.
Right.
Now,
I knew, of course, you were.
Oh, will you shut up? Who's answering the question? Yeah. He never really came on our trips or came to any of our social functions. Tucky did.
Yeah.
I roomed with Tucky when we went to Ireland, and Tucky was a great ruck rover. If you had two going up against you, just say to Tucky, just stand in front of this bloke, and he would. A very, very underrated player, Tucky, and a very, very good player. No, we never spoke. We knew the ball was going forward. Lee would be doing his own thing. He wouldn't pick anyone up. He'd be going, and Tucky was a very disciplined player and probably one of the only players that could play off a man, keep him quiet and pick up kicks himself, which you don't see today.
So you and the great Lee Matthews never got on?
No, we're not a case of not getting on. You know, he didn't front up to our functions or, you know, he wasn't one of the boys. And so it just wasn't me. It was,
the rest of the team, you're saying?
Well, he didn't mix with the rest of the team either.
I don't want to be with Don. I don't want to go out with him. No, he's a fool.
They were great side. I used to follow.
Yeah, but Matthew, you know, Matthews would go for the ball, and he was tremendously courageous.
Yes.
He'd go for the ball. He had a low centre of gravity. So I didn't know where I was hitting the ball. I mean, I was struggling to get up there, let alone direct the ball and say, get there or get there. But they'd play in front of their man. That's the way we were instructed. Matthews, low centre of the ground, tremendous courage. You couldn't knock him off the ball when he was over the top.
And brutal ass Neville Bruns.
Yes.
Well, that was a different thing. But, you know, yeah. So it was an interesting dynamic. As you would find playing in your team, there would be blokes that you wouldn't be compatible with. And it was just so happened we all had an ability to play
football
together.
Who weren't you compatible with in your team?
Well, I'd say no.
Exactly. Of course you'd say no.
Yeah, but you're an amiable, you're a likable person. Yeah. You're an outward person.
Well, so likable, Bill, are you, that you are a star and you've gone from strength to strength and you're a big man. You're going to swell up and explode one day. But before you explode, I affectionately call him Fat. And he has been and is a star on the medium, Don, that we call the media. And we thank him for coming in, and we could have done this for another hour.
Yes. Thank you, Sam, and thank you, Don. I haven't really met Don, but I've admired him from afar.
Well, I rang up and apologised to you one day. I was critical of you on up in Sydney, wasn't
it?
Yeah. You did something stupid. What did you do?
I kicked a cross goal or something. Yeah, and you said that was a dickhead. But you're a weird man, Sam, and a lovely man. I like you. You're weird, but I think I've found someone weirder. Don.
Around the streets late at night, I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again, I'm just crazy about you, babe.